I'm going to be honest, I wouldn't even, they had tore down so many things that have to do with the actual history of Kansas City jazz and that whole era, you know, that had it not been for my father, I would not have even known the importance of different parts of my own neighborhood.
That's Lonnie McFadden. I'm Jamie Green, and this is Trading Fours. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Trading Fours. I'm your host, Jamie Green, and today we've got Lonnie McFadden, a Kansas City force of nature. If you don't know who Lonnie McFadden is in Kansas City, you should move. You should leave. You should go somewhere else, because he is such a huge part of the scene here, and he is a great guy, and he's been doing this for a long time, and he's a ton of fun. So Lonnie and I had been going back and forth a long time, trying to get on each other's schedule. We finally got scheduled, and this is a great chat. But before we get started, today's episode is sponsored by Campfire Audio. Campfire Audio makes top-notch quality earphones for music lovers alike. Whether you're a musician, producer, or audiophile, Campfire has the perfect product for you. They spring from a passionate focus on refined audio reproduction with a small team of highly skilled and dedicated craftspeople. They continuously experiment with materials and techniques to create something unique and special for the people like me who care about it most. Their earphones are second to none in performance and finish. So check it out. I got it down in the show links. CampfireAudio.com. That's CampfireAudio.com. Okay. Hey, you know what? We're going to get started. Here's my conversation with Lonnie McFadden. Well, I think a really good place to start, if you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
So let's, I'm guessing, Lonnie, that the idea of having your own jazz club and honoring the great history in this town by naming it the Reno Club, which is like in the halcyon of the great stories of jazz that made Kansas City. Yeah. This had to be kind of a dream. And then to have it happen during a global pandemic has to be, well, how would you describe it? I assume it's kind of like some parts are great, some parts aren't great. Let's talk about Lonnie's Reno Club.
It's amazing. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. And like you said, it came in the middle of the pandemic. I was just hired to come down there. They had figured out how to turn the parking lot into a nightclub. And I had never played at the Ambassador Hotel. The second week I was there, the owner of the hotel was there. And he liked what I was doing. And he said he wanted to partner with me to turn the downstairs into a speakeasy style nightclub. And he told me I could name it. And I had a lot to do with the decor. And so we really were partners. And now it's Lonnie's Reno Club. I mean, he said he wanted to name it after me. But he said I could pick the name. So I'm the one, you know, I know a lot about Kansas City history like you do. And like you said, the Reno Club was an important part of the whole Kansas City jazz scene. So I named it Lonnie's Reno Club.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I think for people who don't know, well, it's this is the part that makes me sigh about Kansas City. We tend to tear things down that we shouldn't. I think the Reno Club now is a parking lot next to the police department, right?
That's it. That's exactly where it is.
So, I mean, and if you watch the Ken Burns jazz documentary, which people who haven't, I highly recommend you do, because it's a really good overview.
Yes.
Doesn't have guitarists in it. We don't talk about Wes Montgomery, and that kind of irritates me. But otherwise great. But,
you being a guitar player, I get it. I tell you.
Right? But, yeah. I mean, it's literally the place where, you know, what's his bucket? John is, he's, what's his last name? His name's the guy that was the producer. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, he's in Chicago. He's got the radio on in his car. It's super late, and he hears Count Basie.
Oh, John Hammond. You're talking about just discovered Count Basie. Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
Senior moment, Lonnie. Had a senior
don't
moment.
Don't worry about it. We don't go into that.
No doubt. So John Hammond's in his car in Chicago, and he's like, this is amazing, and is so enticed by it that he literally drives to Kansas City to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Kansas City stomp and the Kansas City sound takes over the jazz world.
Yeah.
And we made it into a freaking parking lot. What are we doing?
That's a whole different conversation there. I mean, I've often wondered about all of that kind of stuff because I'm going to be honest. They had tore down so many things that have to do with the actual history of Kansas City jazz and that whole era, you know, that had it not been for my father, I would not have even known the importance of different parts of my own neighborhood. So,
No, it's nuts. It's, you know, the Playmore. I mean, there's all these places that were just icons that are just gone. Yeah. But like you said, we could go in that rabbit hole for a long time. And I don't want to be a bitch and moan session. Let's be positive.
That's right. We're not going to do that.
No, but so I appreciate you. You're trying to honor that legacy, but I always tell people the best way to honor the legacy is to go out and support live music now.
I agree.
Because the next Charlie Parker or Lester Young or whoever might be among our midst right now and needs people to come to the show and support them. So
that's absolutely right.
So let's talk about this club. So are you had it like a water main break or something? The basement? What the hell?
Oh yeah, you have been hearing about. We've had quite a few challenges. I mean, like let's start with the number one thing. Like you already said, we opened in the pandemic, but we were doing great. As a matter of fact, at the time we opened on November 5th, and then we went on, and the best night we had back then was on St. Valentine's Day, and me and the crew was down there celebrating after everybody left. That night, after I turned off my phone, I didn't realize it, but the place got flooded. The next morning, they told me that the whole lower level was 3 feet underwater. A pipe had busted in the building next door that's attached to the Ambassador Hotel, and it just totally devastated everything. And so they had to gut everything out. We were on the top floor. I like to call it the penthouse. We were up there for about 3 or 4 months, actually, while they totally gutted everything out and rebuilt it. And now we're back and it's better. And we're having a good time, man. We're doing good numbers. People are really responding. And this week we start our first of a 6 week soul series. We're calling it Summer Soul Series, where we're doing all the classic R&B from the 60s and 70s. So it's a lot going on, man.
That's great. Like I said, I have to come down and see it. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm hoping there's not going to be locust next, right? We've had pandemic. We've had water main breaks. You paid your.
We've had a lot. We had a pandemic. We had a water main break. We moved up to the penthouse, and then over half of our equipment got stolen. The second week we're there, we had to replace all of our stuff, and now we're back downstairs and all is well.
Okay.
Locusts. We don't need it.
No. So you come from a very historic family in Kansas City. I have a great love for my father and his musical ability. And obviously people are going to know who you are here in town, but Lonnie, this is the craziest thing. I get people listen to this around the country. And actually the second biggest place besides Kansas City is India of all places, which I still don't understand why people halfway around the world are interested, but I'm glad they're here and I'm happy they're here. So, but they're going to have no idea about you. So let's talk about your childhood and all the people that you got to meet let's talk about your father first and what he did.
Well, my father was a tap dancer. He was an extremely good tap dancer. He started when he was like 11 or 12 years old, and he started performing professionally at 13 or 14, I want to say. It was him and his friends, and they called themselves the Four Chocolate Drops. They were like I said, at like 13 and 14 years old, they were already playing on shows with Benny Moten and Jimmy Rushin. And after a couple of years, they were getting billing over Jimmy Rushing. And I've got all these old newspaper clippings. Later on, one of the guys died of leukemia at like 16, 17 years old. Then they became the Three Chocolate Drops, which was during the time that they were actually performing at the Reno Club in front of Count Basie's band. You know, back in the beginning, Count Basie was part of Benny Moten's band. So they all kind of evolved together. And yes. So my father was a big part of that whole thing. And then, of course, World War II happened and he went over to the Navy and was part of, you know, and he performed over there, actually, too. He was part of a traveling show over in Honolulu with different service people. They would, you know, they would entertain. They had their own show, basically. And then he came back and he was doing a single. Now, in the meantime, right before he left and went to World War II, he was a performer in front of a band here called the Deans of Swing. It was all these really good musicians that were younger musicians. And of course, that's when him and Charlie Parker got to be friends. And so when he came back, he did a lot of shows with Charlie Parker and Jay McShann, and then Charlie Parker left and went to New York, but Jay McShann was still here. Big Joe Turner, he was in and out. He was back and forth back then, you know? And so a lot of those guys I met a lot of them that were still alive when I was coming up.
So who'd you meet and you're like, this guy's really cool, and then your dad gives you the backstory after you left. Like, do you have one of those kind of experiences? Like, oh, he seems nice, and your dad's like, hey, that guy did such and such.
I was a lot of those kind of people, you know. Especially, I remember the first time my father took my brother and I down to now we call it the Foundation. Back then, it was the Black Musicians Union, Union 627. Mm-hmm. And back then, you know, they would hang out. It was really the union. I mean, they would hang out during the afternoon. And that's where I joined the union at 16 years old. But the first time I went down there, I was like 11 or 12. We had did a gig downtown at one of the places. I don't think this was the time we played at the Muehlbach. That was when we were younger. But we played somewhere downtown. And he wanted to show us what was up. So we went to the what they called the Foundation back then. Again, it was the union. And everybody was hanging out. Back then, it was filled with cigar smoke. Mm. Back-to-back people. Music was all in the air. I mean, people was just jamming, really jamming. And it was like a scene in a nightclub. You see these old men with young girls on their lap. And I remember a lot. I remember a lot that it was straight out of a movie. What do they call that? I forget the movie with Eddie Murphy about Harlem. Nights.
Yeah. Harlem Nights.
It was all of that. And I walked in there, and me and my brother, and everybody knew my dad. Jimmy, what's up? You know? And so he had us to tap dance, and that was my introduction to what the Kansas City life was like. And back then, Jay McShann was down there. I met two guys that used to be with Count Basie. I don't remember their names.
Right.
I met one guy that used to be with Duke Ellington. I don't remember his name. I remember, like I said, Big Joe Turner was down there. Arvel Miner, that's when I first met Arvel Piggy Miner, who used to be with the Deans of Swing. And I met Step Buddy Anderson. That's the guy that introduced Charlie Parker to Dizzy Gillespie. They played in the Billy Eckstein's band together later on. I got to know Buddy Anderson very well. And I remember when in my previous marriage, I remember I was driving out in Westport, and he was on the corner playing trumpet, just, you know, playing just a street musician. And I remember I loved him so much that I didn't want my wife to meet him like that. So I didn't even stop or anything, because this was a guy I grew up and that was my guy. I mean, and so it's like I saw a lot of guys age, Fats Dennis, Hurley Dennis, so many names. I could go on and on with names that people my age probably won't even remember. Rozelle Claxton, Paul Gunther. I think I met him one time. so many names, man, that are from the heyday of Kansas City jazz.
Well, this what a way to grow up, right?
I mean, that was cool, man. I loved it.
And I tell people, so this is so interesting because it's one of those things. I think people, not all people, not like nerds like you that are music nerds, like we don't take this for granted, but people in this town take this for granted. So I have Neil Giraldo on, who's Pat Benatar's husband and is, you know, I don't know how many hits they've had. They had a million hits and stuff. And he is so excited to talk about Count Basie and Big Joe Turner. And he loved, and he made a, they made a whole big band album in the early 90s. And he's like, it's what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to be a part of this. And he's like, have you seen the movie Last of the Blue Devils? I'm like, yeah, I've seen that movie. He goes, he was so thrilled that I knew. And it's up on YouTube. I'll put the link in the show notes. People can watch it.
Good.
This is like in the 1970s where all these guys, and Basie's there and they all come back and kind of shoot the shit and tell stories and play. But it's fabulous.
Yeah.
But I don't think people get that, Lonnie, how much this town had such a huge impact on the music. You know, Shake, Rattle, and Rolls, that's a rock and roll tune, man. It wasn't just jazz that this town influenced. So anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. A lot of people don't realize the impact that Kansas City had on rock and roll. When if you just go back and listen to the way Jay McShann plays, and it's obvious that was the development, you know, that boogie woogie style and all of the things that they were doing back then. You know, listen to the old recordings of the old rhythm section with Count Basie, Joe Jones, and Walter Page, Count Basie, Joe Jones, Walter Page, and of course Freddie Green, and you get the basics, the beginnings of boogie woogie and rock and roll right there. So all of this, I mean, yeah, I mean, really, me and you could go on and on because you're right. I'm just saying, I agree with everything you said.
So when you do your shows, how many people are local? How many people are from out of town? They get the word from, you know, the people up in the hotel above, like, hey, go check out the Reno Club in the Bay. Like, do you talk to these people on set break? Like, what's your crowd like? Are they mostly
local? It's a good mixture, obviously. And I'm happy about this. A lot more people are from Kansas City. I expected it to be more travelers, more tourists that just happen to be at the hotel. But I'd say it's like 90% of people that have been coming to see me for years. Well, you know, I've been doing this forever, and I'm happy that they still like, I'm not thrown out in the pasture, you know. It's like I'm still part of the music thing around here, and I feel very fortunate. Like I said, I grew up seeing what my age looks like for a lot of musicians.
Dude, you look great.
And oh man,
you
feel
look younger
great.
Than me.
But I'm still in it, and I'm glad, man. I'm so excited to still be a part of what's going on.
That's great. So, is it mostly you're mostly playing trumpet? You're mostly singing? You're tap dancing? Walk me through a show. What are you doing?
Yes,
all of it.
No. Okay. Now that I'm over 30, I don't do as much tap dancing as Ronald and I went, you know, back in the day. Ronald and I were just
right.
It was crazy. But what I do, always tap dance at least once a night, and I try to stretch. I mean, again, it's all about improvisation. I don't have a partner up there, so it's no choreography. Everything I do is off the top of my head. It's never even close to the same thing twice. I mean, if we do it five times in one night, which I don't have the endurance to do, it won't be even close. It's jazz. It's jazz. It happens one time. Yeah. And that's what I do. So basically, I tell people a little bit about the history of Kansas City jazz and why, you know, when you walk in there, I got all these large photographs of great musicians that actually played at the Reno Club. Of course, Charlie Parker, Count Basie, Mary Lou Williams, you know, all of these people like this, Hot Lips Page, all these people. And so I talk about them so people will know who they are and why they are on the wall. And of course, there's a picture of my dad's group, the Four Chocolate Drops. And when you first walk in, it's a picture on one side, about a 5-foot picture of Louis Armstrong. On the other side, it's a 5-foot picture of the Three Chocolate Drops. So the whole thing is about the history of Kansas City. Our catchphrase is history, class, and Kansas City jazz. And that's what we're about.
That's great. No, I was actually, I just finished a really good biography of Thelonious Monk, and Mary Lou Williams was a huge influence on him. He talked about how much she meant to him.
See what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a ripple in a pond.
Yeah.
It just ripples out for generations. This stuff still reverberates. Yeah. So
I'm so glad you said that. I've often told people that Mary Lou Williams is probably one of the greatest and least spoke about jazz musicians. I mean, she was a pioneer. Think of this. A woman band leader back in that time when you had all these great piano players and stuff, and she was respected by all of them. She was a band leader, a writer, arranger, and just like you said, she was like a big sister slash mentor figure to the Beboppers, Monk, Bird, Diz, Bud Powell, all of them. She was in there with them, and they respected her.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, man.
Yeah, she doesn't get her due. Women still have to put up with, you know, misogynistic bullshit in 2021. Could you imagine back then how much crap she had to put up with?
And I can't even imagine.
And she's black. So she's got the crap to deal with.
And I remember my mom and dad always talking about, again, I didn't know who these people were. I was just a kid. But I remember stories and all this stuff, listening to my mom and dad talk about Mary Lou Williams and Piney Brown and of course, Charlie Parker, all these people. I used to love the story, so I've got all these newspaper clippings. I'm eventually gonna get with somebody and write a book. I know it's gonna.
You need to do it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I really do. Yeah,
I hear you. That's great. So obviously, we talked about a lot of trumpeters already. So you're growing up as a kid, who makes you think I got to pick up this trumpet and play and blow?
I had a mentor, a friend of mine named Clyde Bagby. He was like, you know, when you in 10, 11 years old, you think it's nothing on earth that's cooler than teenagers. You know, you just want to be, they act, some of them are starting to smoke cigarettes. And in my neighborhood, the gangster guys were standing on the corner and I wanted to be one of them. Thank God for my father. He wasn't having it, but that was my influence. So this one guy that was 17 years old named Clyde Bagby, he was already a trumpet player. And he was one of those real cool guys, but he would also, when he came by our house, he would get in the floor and play with the slot cars. I don't know if you remember slot cars.
Oh, yeah.
Racetrack.
Yeah.
Okay. We had a slot car racing track and he would get in the floor with me and Ronald and play. And he had on these Sansibel pants and these jerseys. I mean, it was all the way back in the 60s, you know, and he was sharp and he had this old Lincoln Continental that had the kissing doors, you know, the doors
in
the middle. Yeah. And so I thought nothing on earth was cool as Clyde Bagby. And then later on, I'm about 10 years old, and my father said, we had already been taking piano lessons. He said that I want you guys to learn how to play a horn too. One of you gonna play a trumpet, one of you gonna play a sax. You figure it out. And I got to play trumpet just like Clyde. Which it worked out great for us because my personality fits a trumpet and my brother's personality fits saxophone. So it really worked out great for us. But that was my first influence. And from Clyde, of course, my father had me listening to Louis Armstrong. And just from him having Ronald listen to Charlie Parker, I was introduced to Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie because they were the trumpet player that were playing with Charlie Parker. Mm-hmm. So Lewis, Miles, Diz, and then later on, I started liking Freddie Hubbard and you know, people like that. And so that was the people that really influenced me more. And of course, I couldn't listen to Count Basie without hearing the trumpet section. And when we were learning how to tap dance, my dad had the Count Basie albums from the 50s, 60s. So you had Snooky Young playing in the I still don't think there are very many trumpet players in the history of jazz that played more soulful than Snooky Young. And then, you know, later on, I got to see Snooky Young up in the trumpet section with Doc Severson on the Tonight Show. So all these were my heroes. They're still my heroes. Yeah. I got a lot of transcriptions of Snooky Young right now. I mean, these are still the guys that I look up to, man. And, you know, so yeah, I'm all about it.
No. Oh my gosh, there's so much to delve into. But let's start. So did you know Doc Severinsen's still playing out?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at that documentary right now. I'm taking my time. I'm looking at like 15, 16. I have a guy that sent me a link. I met the guy that produced it.
And it's amazing, Lonnie.
Yes, I'm just like 20 minutes into it, and I'm blown because I'm trying to take it all in. Yeah.
Well, so we'll back up. So I'm a Gen Xer. So and my dad's from Nebraska, and so, and actually my dad knew Johnny Carson a little bit in college because one of my dad's good friends was a frat brother with Johnny Carson, and back then Johnny Carson would MC stuff and did magic shows. That was his thing back then. Anyway,
yeah.
So the Tonight Show. Well, there was only three channels, right? That's part of it.
That's so right.
It's ubiquitous. You have to be here. And my parents watched it every night and stuff. But that band was unbelievably good. I mean, there were so many great players in that band.
Yes.
And, you know, Doc always, it became about the loud suits and kind of the butt of the joke and kind of stuff. But God, that guy's great.
Oh, he could play though. Yeah, Doc could play. And he still can play, just like you said, 94 years old now.
Yes.
And he still can hit a double high C.
It's unbelievable.
And he is such an inspiration to people like me. It's like I have no excuse at my age. I sometimes, people want to say, well, Lonnie, you know, at your age, you're not supposed to hit them high notes anymore. Then I look at Doc. I'm like, yes, I am. Yes, I am.
It's such an inspiration.
It's unbelievable.
It's so great. And it's just so I will put that in the show notes, too, because people need to watch this documentary because, you know, it's sad. You know, I think we do that. And I'm getting older too. We're all getting older, but I still think we get to that point where just like, we just think, oh, well, they're retired. They're dead. Or you know what? In fact, it showed up on my wife and I are sitting on the couch and said, you might like American Masters, Doc Severinsen. And we literally looked at it and said, is Doc Severinsen still alive?
See what I mean?
And it's like, not only is he still alive, he's kicking ass.
Oh, he's kicking ass. Like you said, man, when they did the documentary, like I said, I'm just 20 minutes into it. He was 92 then, but I saw a clip of him recently. He's 94 now. And he's still, man. But he said a lot of things already that I need to remember. And I'm already into that. He stays healthy. I'm lucky I'm a tap dancer. So I work out every day, not trying to work out. I'm just trying to make sure my legs work Friday and Saturday night, but it's working for me. It keeps me in shape. All the things he's talking about, you know, the way he does the planks and stuff. I do sit-ups and push-ups all the time. So again, it's about staying in shape because that trumpet is a very physically demanding instrument.
Yeah, it is. And the only thing else I'd say, so there's so many trumpeters, but we can't. So I growing up, I started on piano as well. So I was a big Billy Joel fan because I was like, you know, it's good. And I'm listening to 52nd Street and my dad comes in. He goes, hey, that's Freddie Hubbard. I'm like, what? He goes, playing trumpet.
On Zanzibar, killed it. Oh, I still remember when that first came out. I was riding down the street. And back then, you know, like you had AM FM radio. And the channel I was listening to, I'm hearing Billy Joel. Then all of a sudden at that, I'm like, whoa, what? And I had to go get the record just to see who it was playing on it.
Yeah.
And Freddie Hubbard. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, if you're attuned to that world, you can identify guys by their sound.
Yes. Yeah.
The very distinctive sound.
Absolutely.
It's really, I can do that with guitar players. I can't do it with horn players because I've been listening to guitar players my whole life. But it's just kind of fascinating. It's like their personalities coming out through the instrument.
That's what jazz is about. You just said it. All art forms are like that. All art is about you showing up. And the more distinctively you are, the more you get, you know, Picasso wasn't the only guy that could paint, but he's the only guy that was that distinctive. Miles Davis wasn't the only guy that could play the trumpet, but he was more distinctive. And the whole thing, that's what all of us aspire to have your own voice. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to have your point of view.
Yes.
In fact, it was so interesting with that Monk biography. So he put the guy, his great writer, he's professor of history at UCLA, and he was putting in the early reviews and they hated him. They just didn't get it, right? And now he's like, what, In Walk Bud, Straight No Chaser. There's like tons of jazz standards that everybody plays.
Yeah. All of us got to learn. You got to learn Monk's tunes. You got to. Yeah.
So he's like this iconoclast. And then eventually they're like, people figure it out. Like, you got to be that person that kind of, you know, what they say, you have to break an egg to make an omelet. Like, he was breaking some eggs to make his omelet, right?
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. And again, I accidentally got turned on to Monk listening to Charlie Parker. You know, that's what led me to Thelonious Monk and Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, all of that, because of my father's Charlie Parker records. And back then he had the old 78s, the thick ones. My father had the original.
Don't drop those. Drop them, they break.
Exactly.
They have all my dad's albums too.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's really cool. All those original recordings.
I know.
How has Kansas City changed in the last like 30 years musically, from a music standpoint? And then I have a follow-up.
Okay, let me just say, everywhere is way better. It's way better. I mean, we've got so many places to play. And I tell people that it's a reason that people are moving here from Texas and Chicago and New York, and they can work. We've got more. I mean, it's still not all the way back because of the pandemic. But so I'm still talking pre-pandemic in a way. But I would go to Chicago. My wife and I'd go to California and New York and different places. And in Kansas City, what a lot of us don't realize how fortunate we are. You can go as a person that loves the art form too, not just as a musician. 7 days a week, you can find live entertainment here in Kansas City and at a lot of different places. And out of those 7 days a week, you can find pretty good entertainment. It's not just anybody playing. I mean, you can find some very good musicians playing 7 days a week in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that about any city that I've been to. I've been to New Orleans. I've been to New York. I mean, yeah, you go to Broadway and spend the $120. But I'm talking about here in Kansas City, most places you can just walk in and you can hear somebody's pretty doggone good.
Yeah, it's crazy too, because I've had on a million local, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to do this, was it's like there's some amazing musicians in this town.
Yeah.
Nobody outside of this town really know about. But I had Angela Ward on from the Ward family.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been knowing them forever.
And their son, who's 18,
yes,
he's ridiculously good already.
Yes.
And that's what I'm talking about. Desmond Mason. I had Desmond Mason on. He's a great keyboard player. He's a kid to me anyway. I'm sure he's not to himself.
Me too. I feel the same way. But so
there's all these guys. There's all these great young guitar players, Matt Hopper and all these other guys that are just sloshmen. And I'm trying to. So it's interesting. And the reason why I'm asking this, and I love Pat Metheny. I do. He's put out a lot and I've seen him live. And I was kind of taken aback, and I was curious. So he said he was in KC Inc. magazine, and he was like, basically, the scene's not great here. That's why he never plays here. And I was like, at first, you're kind of initial, because, you know, we're all very proud of Kansas City, and you're kind of hurt by it. But then I had to think to myself, it's like, he probably left here 50 years ago, right? Because he went to college, University of Miami, I believe. That's where he met Jocko, I think. And then he never came back. And I was like, maybe for the big acts, but certainly since I moved here in 94, music seems a lot better than it was 30 years ago.
It's way better. And the level of musicianship is way better. You've already touched on it. Like these young guys, there are so many people that are 35 and younger that are so badass.
Oh, DeAndre Manning. He's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could go on and on, really. You know, the problem, and I got interviewed about this one, just mention some of the young. My biggest problem is I know I'm going to leave somebody out. There are so many of them. There's so many of them. I got three that play with me nightly. Zach Beeson on bass, Andrew Ouellette on piano, and Tyree Johnson. That's three of them right there that I get to play with every weekend. But there's a ton more, just like you mentioned, DeAndre Manning. Zach Morrow from St. Louis. Again, we people come in here for a reason. Mm-hmm. Peter Schlamp from St. Louis.
Yep.
Matt Villinger, St. Louis. But they have all been living here for the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, Jackie Myers came up from Texas.
Jackie Myers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the list goes on and on. Like I said, my biggest problem, I know I'm going to leave somebody out because it's so many. There are so many of them that are so young and so good. And I think we've got to, again, like you said, I think Pat might be right if he's talking about the big name acts. But if Pat were still around and if he was coming up now, he'd be hard pressed to find any city, including New York, that he could get more work and more experience. Now it's a lot to be, you know, like I hear some people talking about the niches. I'm not getting into that, you know, because I think it's room for everybody. Obviously, I'm a guy that's carrying on the torch for Bird and Them. But it's a lot of room for original music. It's a lot of room for hip hop. It's a lot of room for the fusion stuff that's kind of like hip hop and jazz. You know, a lot of drummers play that, you know, that kind of thing. But it's room for all. I like it all.
Yeah.
I say, yes, I want the new young creative minds. But again, that's not my lane. My lane is history class in Kansas City jazz.
Yeah. Well, we need that. So you want to hear my crazy idea? We need to get We need to get Quentin Lucas on this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're a World Heritage Site. 18th and Vine is a World Heritage Site. I don't know if you knew that. Like UNESCO, like United Nations.
Yeah.
And I was like, we should actually do something about this. I think because it's such a hard deal for musicians to have healthcare, because healthcare out of pocket's ridiculously expensive and musicians don't make a lot of money. Unless they're, you know, Beyonce. Otherwise, most of us don't.
Yeah.
So why not entice, why not see if they could put together some sort of medical plan through the city and have musicians that come here could actually get health insurance as a way to honor the UNESCO thing, to bring in more of those musicians, like you wow. said. Anyway, so that's one of the things that I would like to see. So next time I see Quentin, I'll bring it up.
Please.
But don't you think, like, we need to build on this? You know, it's fine to go and look at the statue of Bird and, you know, go through the tour of the actual museum. It's great. There's cool things in there. You should see it. But you really need to go to the thing that's within there, the Blue Room itself, and see somebody play. It's a whole different dynamic.
Yeah. You're right.
So I would like to see Kansas City. It's like we talk about, and it's fine. Would never diss this, not in this town. But we talk about fountains and barbecue. And the Chiefs right now, because they're good, and the Royals back when they were good, all the time. We never talk about the music, right? That's one of the things that I would like to see us. You know, you get in New Orleans, you get off the plane, there's a big picture, there's a big statue of Satchmo. I think the actual airport's called Satchmo, you know, Louis Armstrong, right? Why are we not doing this?
I could not agree with you more of everything you just said. And the thing that the younger generation doesn't realize is that we didn't even have anything that made that the jazz district until Cleaver was the mayor. And he was able to talk to people that have money into understanding that we are missing a lot of tourist dollars. So now we at least have the Blue Room. And that wasn't there when I was growing up. When I was growing up, it was nothing that resembled jazz at all. And when I was a teenager, when I was a young man, that started happening, 30 years ago, maybe? Yeah. We're talking about the 90s. That's when all that happened. So before the 90s, you had like maybe 50 or 60 years that they had totally erased everything. About 50 years that they totally, they didn't want anything to do with that. You know, they just wanted to focus on the city of fountains, and they didn't want you to, I don't know, maybe, you know, I got a lot of theories behind it, but the people that are basically in charge of the image that they want to project. But again, I'm glad they're realizing the tourist dollars. Let's just deal with it from a financial standpoint. If we did what New Orleans, what Memphis is doing, and we can legitimately do it, our history warrants it. We are one of the four cornerstones of jazz history. And because of that, I think the more we, for lack of a better word, exploit who we are and advertise who we are, I think we'll attract worldwide audience.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Well, there's so much with that. So Robert Altman came and shot the movie Kansas City, mm-hmm. he literally had to build fake building facades to shoot the movie because we had torn down. But you know, Lonnie, it's so interesting. Union Station was falling apart, right?
Yeah.
Liberty Memorial was falling apart.
I know.
They had torn down all, like we talked about, Reno Club. That's one of a million clubs that got that town. And I don't understand what's with this town. Why? I don't know. It's interesting. And there's got, you know, obviously 18th and Vine, there's got to be a racial component to that as well. But I just can't imagine anywhere else. Well, you know what? They're still trying to rebuild Walt Disney's first studio. Some jerk ran his car into it yesterday. I saw it on the news. We don't even have that here. Like Walt Disney, everybody knows what Disney is. Like you can go anywhere in the world and say Disney and they'd be like, yeah, I get that. And we didn't even protect that. So
no, we didn't.
It's crazy.
No, I, my brother and I used to talk about this all the time. It's like, for some reason, the mentality of Kansas City people has been that it's not great until somebody else does. In other words, after they do it in New York, now we're going to do it. After they do it in California, now. And what I think that comes from us not embracing our own identity. So because the people that have been in charge of the image, like you said, they didn't even capitalize on the fact that Walt Disney created Mickey Mouse here in Kansas City. How do we not capitalize on that? No. How do we not capitalize on the greatest jazz musician, arguably, in the history of jazz is from right here in Kansas City? How do we not capitalize on that? So I've often, like you said, yes, there is a racial component to it, but there's also an identity crisis going on that I think. I've often wondered why we want to glorify everything that everybody else does and not embrace the greatness that we have around us right here.
Yeah. Well, I guess you and I need to figure out what we're doing next.
I don't know, but I'm doing my little part.
No, you are doing
the
part.
Reno Club, that was intentional. When they brought this offer to me, Paul Corey told me, he said, Lonnie, you can name it anything you want to. You can name it Lonnie's Cotton Club, Lonnie's Harlem Club, anything you want to. But I want your name on it. When he gave me that option, I already knew I was going to do something that talked about Kansas City. And like you just said, you already given so many examples of why I chose the Reno Club. So much history took place right there. So yes, I'm like we're like-minded in that way. I am so proud of Kansas City and the great people from here. Like you said, Walt Disney, Charlie Parker, and the list can go on and on. Really, there's a lot of the things that Mary Lou Williams should.
Nobody even knows who she is.
I know.
Unless it's like you and people like you and me, they don't even know who it is. If you and I went out on the street and said, what do you think about Mary Lou Williams? They'd be like, who? I mean, nobody knows. Like I said, we could go on this rabbit hole for hours, but public policy is my day job and I do interact with the mayor and the manager. So I might bring it up when we get past this pandemic, we need to do a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, we just do it. And like you said, if nothing else, be greedy about it. It helps with tourist dollars.
That's it. That's what I say. Let's just be greedy about it and think about what's going to get worldwide attention. Other than right now, we got the Chiefs. We got Patrick Mahomes. But before him, we still had the history that is authentically ours, the jazz. And like you said, that's Walt Disney.
Yeah,
It's so much. That we authentically have, that we have not made sure that we got monuments and museums and documentation to prove that. So when people come here from Europe and Japan, they say, oh my God, I've read about this. Now I'm actually standing on hollow ground.
Yeah. Japanese seem to be more into it than Americans, which is really ridiculous. Okay.
Had it not been for my dad, people in Japan and in Paris would have been telling me about my own neighborhood.
Isn't that
crazy? They know the history. They know it.
So for one last thing on this, and then we'll wrap up. So I was looking, and I will give the city a pass because there was a global pandemic and we were all, especially last August, were home. But you know, Charlie Parker's 100th birthday was last year.
I know.
We did nothing. I mean, it should have been a centennial thing that should have been planned out 3-4 years ahead of time. We should have made a huge deal about it. But anyway.
Yeah. I was part of a documentary that the guy was talking about exactly what you're saying. It's it doesn't make sense that this city has not embraced, like you said, the centennial. And that I, even though it was a pandemic, this guy PBS did a documentary and intentionally called it Bird Not Out of Nowhere, you know, for a slant on the famous recording he made. And not out of nowhere. No, he's from here. And how come we have not embraced that? So every year I've been celebrating Charlie Parker every year from the bandstand. And I think that's one of the reasons I was invited to the table with PBS. But every year, and just like every year this year, on the weekend of his birthday, Friday and Saturday, and that's hard music for me. I mean, I'm a trumpet player. It doesn't lend itself to a lot of those fast runs and things, but I'm going to be playing a lot of Bird that last weekend of August.
So to wrap up, first of all, I'm so glad we finally got to do this.
Me too. Thank you.
You've been on my radar a really long time.
Wow. Thank you.
And I just, you know, I'm going to get a little sappy, but hearing a good guy play trumpet always makes me think of my dad. And that kind of always,
I like it. Well, right, thank heart. You. I like that. I'm glad that I can bring back a memory like that.
Yeah. So people that, maybe it's people in India, maybe it's people wherever on this podcast, what's the best way they can follow you, Lonnie? Like, what's the best way they can keep up? I assume that you have a website that for the club. Is that the place to make sure they know what you're up to? And I'll put it in the show notes. Where's the best place?
Well, right now that is probably because I'm totally all in. I'm all in. But my own website, LonnieMcFadden.com, is another way. And of course, like everybody else, I'm on social media. Lonnie McFadden Jazz on Instagram and Lonnie McFadden on Facebook. But yeah, Lonnie's Reno Club, that's Lonnie's Reno Club. That's probably going to be pretty accurate, because other than the book, the gigs that I had to rebook because of the pandemic, that's where you can find me every Friday and Saturday night. And I've been fortunate enough that when I'm not there, I got Darkest Gates, who spent years in Vegas, and I got Sean Mundy, who it's like listening to Victor Wooten or Stanley Clark, only he can sing too. So I mean, I'm trying to bring in the best that I know personally to fulfill it, to fill in when I'm not there.
All right. I have to play Friday night. I'm playing a gig, but Saturday.
No, that's what's up.
No, that's the thing that was the hardest, sitting home, right? Like, you miss it. It like feeds your soul.
Yeah.
And those live streams, I get why musicians are scrambling and trying to figure out. I always said, you know, playing live music was hard enough. We didn't need to try to figure out, oh, now do it over the internet and figure out if you can make a dollar off of it, right? It's like you're already juggling. That's why we say, and then they threw a fourth ball in, and that was, do it on the internet.
There you go.
Right? I was like, stupid. Who wants to do that? Nobody. So it's so nice to get out and play in front of, that's why, I think musicians are music. And like I said, I'm just a schmo. I know where I am in the lane, but it's about the connections you make with your bandmates and that collaborative process. That's the number one thing. And the second thing is the interaction with the crowd. And when you play something and you see people react to it, that they can, you can tell, they love the song.
I know.
There's nothing like it.
There's nothing better. Nothing better.
So I'm glad we're hopefully getting there. I don't, I'm hoping that we can get smarter. I know Kansas City has the mask mandate in, and whatever it takes to keep us the world open.
Yeah.
We can't go through this. A lot of these clubs aren't going to make it if we have to close down again. They just won't. A couple of places I was playing at, the Jacobson down on the Crossroads, which we really liked, and we're playing, it went away forever. Like, that's happened a lot. So we just have to be safe and be smart. So anyway, on that happy note, I really appreciate the time. I will come out and see you and say hello in person.
I'd love to meet you personally. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate the invitation, so thank you.
Absolutely. We'll have you back at some point, and I'll come down and say hello, and have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, brother. Take care.
Later.
Lonnie McFadden, everybody. So much fun to talk to Lonnie. He's so much fun. Isn't that just fun? I mean, just, we had a blast. I could have talked to that dude all day.
but he has better things to do. So down in the show notes, check it out. Lonnie's Reno Club. If you're here in town, you should check it out. If you're coming to town, you should check it out. It's just a really cool venue. It's a really cool vibe. It's a really cool idea. And Lonnie is a total pro. He'll take care of you. He's going to entertain you. You're going to have a great time. So check that out. That's going to do it for today's episode of Trading Fours. Hey, next time, you guys, if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you know I'm a huge jellyfish nerd. So I'm going to bring up my jellyfish band member bingo card. And so far, Roger Joseph Manning Jr., check. Tim Smith, check. Jason Faulkner, check. And now, Eric Dover, the great singer and guitarist. Eric Dover, he's played with people like Alice Cooper. He was Slash's singer in Slash's Snake Pit. And of course, he's doing Licorice Quartet these days, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Licorice Quartet, growing up in Alabama, and of course, Jellyfish. You know me. You know I'm going to ask. Eric was really nice. We had a great time. So that's next time. Until then, go out, support live music. We'll talk real soon. Bye-bye.